So yeah, welcome back, Jeff. I missed you.
It's good to be back.
Where were you, man? I was looking around the space-time continuum, like, where is he at?
I was hiding.
In a tree?
Yeah.
My favorite arborist.
Way up in a tree.
Way up in a tree.
I'm not an arborist. How many times?
I don't care. That's what it says in the podcast description, so that's what you are for the rest of your life. Oh, God. You're an amazing arborist, an arborino, a deucheleon. That's your new title.
I don't like that.
So how did the winter treat you, Jeff? Were you able to stay warm?
Yeah.
Were you splitting firewood and...
Oh, yeah.
Running around in the sticks, gathering twigs great. For the kindling?
Well, actually, yeah.
Were you?
Well, I didn't have to go too far.
How many biscuit shows since the last time you were on the pod?
Ooh, I'm up to 146.
All right. I lost track, and it's been like seven, I think. Seven or eight. I don't know. Somewhere in that ballpark. So, you're back. I'm so happy to have you.
Thank you.
We got an episode with Pace One from The Outside is coming out. You've met him before, so it's not
I have.
Yeah, so it's not like you're missing out. Like, you know, we've partied together with the guy. So,
yeah, I think it's Sully's, right?
Yep. Oh yeah, it's probably one of the spots. And so you've had the up close experience with the dude. And he was interviewed on the last one, and it's really good. We talk some, like, real hip-hop shit.
Cool.
Which you're capable of. But it was a in-depth conversation of creativity.
That's good.
And excellence.
Excellence.
Mm-hmm. How's your cat?
She's great.
All right, this is the Brass Show. Who gives a shit about your cat?
Hey, fuck you.
Oh, we got a good one today. Now that we're back, we're gonna keep doing this.
My cat says fuck you.
Yeah. Pound pound kitty kitty says you fuck you. Yep. Yeah. It's the Brass Show. So I've got a guest on today. I never know what to call it because you're playing it in the future at some point, so the sun could be anywhere in the sky or below the horizon, whatever. back in the day when I was doing a lot of my rappity rap and stuff, I was competing in rap battles and stuff, and that's how I got to know a ton of really talented, dope, local underground MCs. So, yeah, iBattle is the brand that continues today, but it's New York-based now. And I was in a group, it wasn't a group like music group. It was like a collective of artists. We were trying to like get a label together. We went by Penalty Box. So iBattle started via like a Penalty Box thing. My buddy Tim, Logic. I've told you about the Logic thing before.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, with the like, oh, they think he's the other Logic or he's ripping the name off. It's that guy. I told you the whole story.
Yeah, yeah, I remember. Yeah.
So, the guy started this league. I got to meet every MC in Connecticut, if you're somebody. Like, if you rap in the tri-state area, iBattle touched your existence somewhere. And they are an international brand now because Lex Luthor's holding it down out there. But during that time, I met Sophia Florence. Who's on the phone with us? Are you there? Please tell me I didn't lose you after.
Yeah, no, I'm still here.
Being quiet, like, yeah, that's how it goes. At the time, I mean, here's the thing. I want to just talk about your comedy and your creative process. You know, that's what's important to me. But we have to just like get the elephant out of the room, I guess, if you want to look at it that way. You're a trans person. And when I met you, you were Doc Jones, which is like a name that transfers any gender. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, that is a name that could work for any gender. And yeah, I'm a trans woman. I have been out for 6 years now.
All right. Yeah. I mean, you're the first person I've ever met that's trans that I knew before and after. Like, I've met trans people, I know a couple, but you're the first one that I knew, like, you know what I mean? Because it's usually, for me, it was something, but I kind of, do you remember back when I was battling and I went up to the 413 and I said the F slur in a battle against somebody. Yeah. And you and I had the realest conversation ever. You were like, bro, I know that you're not somebody who's like got a lot of hate in your heart or anything, but like, what are we really doing with this battle stuff? And like, we talked about like the subject matter and stuff, and it's just like looking back at that to now, it's like, you know, I understand more of what that conversation means now. You know, it's like it's coming with age because I'm almost 40. I'm understanding more of everything all the time.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like, you know, where we are as a society in 2022 is very different than where we were in, 2012, that probably right. was.
Yeah. Yeah, the F-slur was flying around on all sorts of rap battles back then. You know what I'm saying? And it's
yeah.
like, now I, you know, in the 90s, it was real worse. That was my nickname
oh, yeah.
for my buddy Jeff over here. I used to call him it every day. He used to get up and I just look at his face and I'd be like, hey, F-slur. But now I won't even, I don't want to touch it anymore. But I remember, like, I made the decision when I was doing the battle rap stuff that I wasn't really going to use, you know, I was like, well, I draw the line at racial epithets. Why would I, you know, continue using this word? I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, if it was really in my heart, I'd have no problem saying it, but.
I think people are being more mindful.
Yeah.
Of what they're saying.
Yeah, because when, like, Louis C.K.'s got a bit about, like, you know, I didn't know that people did that when I first started using the word or whatever. It's a pretty funny bit. I don't know.
Yeah, I know the one you're talking about where he's talking about people that call people from Phoenix Phoenicians.
Phoenicians, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, yeah, you know, that was the, what you know, whatever. So it's context is everything, but once you know what the context means to somebody else, you should try to, like, soften the blow. You know what I mean? I've been in situations where, like people with a lot of money were around looking at me like, oh, maybe we're going to give this guy a raise. And I'm just like, yap, 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 like ruining my life and not knowing it. So, you know what I mean? Like there's always repercussions.
We all do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my God. So many opportunities blown. Yeah. But yeah, I'm glad that you are who you are. And like, what I really want to talk to you about now that we kind of just, you know, we can bring it up again if it comes up naturally or if you want to talk about anything, whatever. But
yeah.
I was really like the jump you took as an artist. You were a hip-hop head. I mean, you still are. I know that you still, like, love the music. But now you're doing comedy. That's what I want to know about more than anything else. Because that interests me. Because I do this music shit and I love it. But what it really comes down to for me is, like, content with, like, emotion behind it. And the first time I ever did a battle, that was the first time I ever, like, tried to be funny. And I didn't really always pull it off. Like, I kind of bombed a few times. You know what I mean?
It's gonna happen.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to bomb as a hip-hop artist because it's brutal. But you've got a knack for it. I was watching that video. How is this coming together? Like, what is the, cause I listen to a lot of stand up and I know it's like hitting a lot of open mics and stuff. Like what's the journey with this?
Okay. So I guess, we can start at the kind of the beginning there. So it's something that I kind of always toyed with, but, I grew up listening to a lot of stand up comedy. I had, Bill Cosby as himself on vinyl.
Oh, it's a classic.
You know, no
it's
longer
still very bizarre.
A record.
Yeah, it's very bizarre. Out. What a weird turn of events that was. I would never have seen that coming. If you went
never
in a time machine and told me like 15 years ago, hey, guess what about Bill Cosby? I never would have. But anyway, so yeah, you've always been a comic, someone who follows comedy.
Yeah, yeah. And, when I was a kid, it was, Bill Cosby and Robin Williams, Gilbert Gottfried, mm-hmm. Sarah Silverman, all these people. And, as I got older, I just kept picking up more and more comedy. And, I went through a kind of rough time in 2018. And I wound up in inpatient, psychiatric inpatient for a couple of days there.
Really? I didn't even know that.
Yeah, I kept it pretty private. It was a bit of a quiet thing, but you know, I was depressed. I was having a bad time, and while I was in you know, inpatient care, they make you go to group therapy every day. Mm-hmm. And mind you, you know, inpatient care is kind of weird, especially I was in Waterbury. It's kind of a small city. And so there wasn't a lot of people, and it's kind of like you had the kind of normal functioning, quote unquote, like kind of depressed people like me there. And then, you know, you had people that just mumbled, like they didn't even talk anymore.
Like people coming out of a mania event or whatever and stuff like that too.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really like an interesting mix of people. I mean, there was two people that did nothing but mumble, and they actually argued with each other one day. You couldn't figure out what they were talking about. You know, yeah. The guy's going rah, 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 like fucking, what do you call it?
Like those Muppet things that go like rah, 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 and the other one.
Yeah. Rah, 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 yeah. Rah, 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 rah. I was thinking of Dick Cheney and Little Bush.
Oh.
And you know, there's a woman that did the same thing, and they, you know, yelled at each other. I don't know why. Never figured it out. But, you know, and as a group therapy, I started telling jokes, and obviously the therapists were not appreciative of, you know, me not taking anything seriously, but it was kind of all I could do to keep myself sane at the time.
Oh, I've had a therapist tell me you're making everything into a giant joke.
Yeah, yeah.
I've got that streak in me. But I don't think I could ever turn it into doing stand-up because it's just not... Look, I'm a fan of stand-up, which is the other reason why I wanted to have you on here, because it's just so much fun to be a fan of that stuff.
Yeah.
But I already ruined hip-hop for myself by just hyper-focusing on that. You know, so I don't want to start another thing that eats up a ton of my time and, you know, but if there's a show going on, let me know. I'll hand out some flyers even, but I want to express that I could see the jump on my side, but so you were in duress basically when you made the jump. It was kind of just a naturally occurring thing.
Yeah, I hadn't made music in a couple of years at the time. So that was about 2018. 2015 it was kind of the last time that I had recorded anything and done a show or anything. And I was going to University of New Haven, and I worked there for some years. And some students found videos of me battling on the internet.
Oh.
Because I was teaching a class.
Oh, no.
And so a student from the music program asked me if I wanted to be in some kind of a, you know, musical event that they had, and had me rapping. And I didn't really know what the event was. And it actually turned out that it was a Black History Month event. And I was like, it's awkward that I'm the one here rapping. But I ended up actually opening up for the guy. I don't know if you ever saw the movie Holes.
Yeah,
I have seen that movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the guy who plays
Shia LaBeouf.
The guy. I'm trying to think of his name. Let me find it.
Holes.
Holes.
Yeah. Hold on, I could probably pull it up.
Kilo Thomas.
Oh, okay.
He plays Zero in Holes.
Right.
And he's a rapper.
Oh, okay.
And I ended up opening up for him.
Well, that's an interesting... Does he have got dope rhymes, or how is he?
I wasn't, thrilled at the time, but, you know, it's something that I could probably revisit.
He's got some clout because of who he is from the movie.
Yeah.
But as far as his skills... I mean, I can tell right off the rip that he didn't do anything that super impressed you. You didn't hear any amazing Maltese or any, you know. Whenever I go to a show, there's always something I bring back.
Yeah, I didn't make rap. That face that you make when somebody raps well, you know?
Yeah, the stank face.
Yeah, the face that, like, somebody insulted your ancestors going back many generations.
Yeah, and if it's real dope, you'd make that, like, the guttural.
Yeah. And so, but that was the last time that I had done anything musically. And
yeah, you were kind of disillusioned by the whole thing. I remember having a conversation with you And you were just like, yeah, local music sucks for a reason. Yeah, all right.
I just was in a bad place with it. I was focusing more on my schooling. You know, I was in college to be a chemical engineer, which is a lot of work, just an absolute astronomical fuck ton of work.
Yeah, no shit.
And so I kind of, you know, broke away and focused on that. But then, you know, I had this bad event and I was like, you know what? I haven't vented about anything in so long and in kind of a real way. Like as an artist, you get used to making your art, and that's kind of a way to get feelings off of your chest. And if you don't have that kind of ventilation, everything right. kind of gets stuck up in there. And so I finally, you know, just kind of cracked and went to an open mic. It was actually the first open mic that I ever rapped at as well.
Oh, okay. So you were dabbling into the idea of maybe, have you thought about combining the two things?
I've thought about it before, but no. So it wasn't like a rap specific open mic. Like right. that was kind of the funny part. It was this mixed mic, and it was down the street from where I was living at the time. It was a John Bale bookstore in Waterbury.
Oh, okay. I know there.
And I was just like, you know what? I can run to John Bale. I can do the mic and have a good time. And if I suck at this, like 8 people will have seen me suck at it.
Right. It doesn't matter.
It's very, you know, low risk.
Yeah. It should be a consequence free environment for when you're starting, but
yeah,
I've heard some nightmare stories of people at open mics though.
God. Yeah. Yeah. It's, I mean, open mic comedy, it's one of those things where everybody thinks they're funny and everybody wants to try. And you know, you have a lot of people that are funny in these kind of, situational kind of things where, like, you know, if you're around your friends telling stories and you've got a lot of funny stories, they work, but it's because people have the context for the rest of your life.
Right. Yeah. It's situational. Right. And so
if you have 15 minutes to do your jokes and you only have those stories, either people are going to miss the context or you're going to spend so much time on exposition that you'll never get the punchline.
Right.
And so I ended up doing that mic, and then I did it a couple more times. You know, I saw that there was a show that another comedian friend of mine was doing over at Cafe 9 in New Haven. And I just shot my shot with the bartender and was like, hey, can you, you know, put me on this show? And I got put on the show. And I was still unsure about whether or not I should be doing comedy at the time, but
right.
I got on and I went to the bar, and I'm a really noticeable person. I've got tattoos on my hands and everywhere else on my body. And I have really large hair.
Right.
I have hair like a member of Megadeth or something. You know?
Yeah, I'm actually looking at a picture of you right now. It's very curly and thick and long.
Yeah. I just have a lot of hair. And so I feel like a very noticeable person. But the bartender actually didn't notice me until the very end of the night. And she was like, oh, my God, I forgot you were here. Let me put you on. And after I was done, there was about 10 people left in the bar. And somebody you know, came up to me at the end and said, you know, you were my favorite comedian tonight. And of course she was drunk, but I was like, you know what? This is a sign that maybe I'm in the right place.
Yeah. You got adulation your first night. I mean, I continue to rap to, I don't know. Some people show up now, but you know,
yeah,
it's not people. I don't know. I feel like people think that because you do music, there's your fans are always going to be people that are like, when they see you, but really it's like, hey Bill, how you been? It's
I mean? A lot of times it's like people will come to every show and stuff, and so after that I started traveling more. I started meeting other comedians and kind of digging around, and I ended up actually spending a lot of time kind of full circle again, one of the places where the 413 Battle League was out of Bishop's Lounge.
Ah, the 413.
And so
I love half of them. No, me and TD3 were cool for a number of years, and I don't know. I wish we were still friends, but we're not. because we weren't before. You know what I mean?
Got it.
Some things happen that recontextualize situations, and you just realize, like, oh, wait, we're not friends. Ah,
yeah.
You got me. You know, I don't hate anybody, but Weeks still talk, though, here and there. I don't even know if they're still doing events. I don't pay attention anymore at all.
Yeah, I have no idea. I still talk to Matt. I'm trying to remember his last name. And I feel bad because he's doing comedy now. But he was a battle rapper from there, and he booked me a few times. Matt Clark.
Yes, Matt Clark is a funny dude. I battled him.
And he's doing comedy now, too.
Oh, good for him.
I haven't seen him do comedy yet. I feel bad, but I just, you know, he's...
MC Motion.
Worcester.
MC Motion, right? That was his name?
Yep.
You ain't gonna beat me, MC Motion. You got a better chance of taking all the pee out the ocean. You got a better chance of smacking the black off Focus or full effect biting Ilmac like none of us noticed. That was him. I bit his head off. He was one of those battle rappers that tries to like play psychological games with you on the internet. And like every time I saw anybody do that, I was like, oh, I'm gonna eat you alive. Because you're like, you leave a trail, you don't answer it, and then they leave a trail of stupid shit for other people to perceive about them, and then you use that against them in the battle. I don't battle anymore, but he's a good dude. I slept on his couch.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I went up to, I can't remember why I was with him. Yeah, he let me stay in it. He was living at the time in a brownstone up in, the fuck is that city? Smells like a fucking bag of smashed assholes everywhere you go there.
Brown,
the fuck is
Worcester?
That?
Brownstone.
Yes, Worcester. He was in fucking Worcester. Yeah. The city's gross. But I love the people there.
Worcester's like one of the worst places on the planet.
Oh my God, it's so gross. Everywhere I went, I was like, this is way before the coronavirus. I just felt like it was dirty everywhere.
Yeah, the only time I ever go there is just to go to the Palladium.
Yeah.
That's it.
Let's go see the Biscuits.
Yeah.
Speaking of Palladium, I got to talk to you about a show at that spot when the mics are off. When the mics are no longer hot, this is something I got.
Awesome. Awesome.
Yeah, life is good. But I'm so happy to see you doing your thing because, there was radio silence from you for a while. Because you were going through your big life change. Like, I didn't know what happened to you at all for like 2 years.
Yeah, there was, I talked to, Mike Rucka, and he said he thought I was dead. I was like, no, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to, make anyone think I was dead.
I didn't think you were dead. I just thought you quit Facebook or something. Like, that was, but you and Rucka are from the same city, so that makes sense to me that he would, jump to a conclusion or whatever.
Yeah, I transitioned and went through a divorce then, and so it was...
Yeah.
And those things aren't related. The divorce was incidental to the transition. It just happened that they were roughly the same time.
Hey, I happen to go through a divorce too, my friend.
High five.
It's a piece of shit. It's a giant piece of shit.
I got very lucky with mine, and it was very amicable and quiet and easy. Mm. I know that one in a million on that one.
I pulled my ex-wife away from me with her kicking and screaming.
Oh, no.
And trying to fix it.
And
lying.
Oh, no.
So I'm okay with it now. It's been like so much. She's a good mom to my kids, though. I got to give my ex-wife props because me and her, not so much with the understanding each other and... Yeah, but we're raising great kids. My kids. Oh, my children. They're great. I'm actually really happy and fulfilled. Sometimes now when the divorce comes up, I feel like I should feel bad because I don't feel bad. I feel like I should feel bad about it, but I look back at it and I'm like, well, it was all just like a pile of shit. I didn't have a happy time with it. I remember getting in the limo with my brand new wife, and we'd been married for 15 minutes. And when the door closed, I went, "Oh my God, what did I do?" And I had the hugest...
That soon you knew it was going to
I shit? Knew when she was walking down the aisle, like, this is a huge mistake, but I can't call it off now.
Oh,
and
no.
then proceed to not have it be a huge mistake for... Don't get me wrong. When before the kids, it was okay. I mean, it was like... Because we were living together before that. I don't know, man. I don't... I'm not going to pretend that I was like Brad Pitt with the six-pack abs over here. I got like really fat for a while when we were married. But we had two... We were having babies. She got fat too. She had two kids. You know? We were a couple of fatties living together in a little shoebox out in Colchester.
Oh, no, not Colchester.
Yeah. It's quiet here. It's very quiet.
Colchester is very quiet. It's nice to pass through. It's better than Salem, at least.
Yeah, Salem is...
At least there's four things there as opposed to the two things in Salem.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I drive through Salem and Colchester once a week, so...
Oh, do you? Yeah, I live...
Yeah, I work in Groton, and I live in Hartford, so...
Oh, are you working for Pfizer?
I can't talk about it.
Okay, that's cool. No, I have a feeling I understand.
She can, but then she'd have to kill you.
Right.
Yeah.
When my parents... Yeah, oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I just, I can never let people know exactly where I work. Just because I'm a shit show when I'm doing comedy. I don't want anybody to be like, you know, which company do you work for?
Right, right. Yeah, I can understand that. There's a lot of really great companies down that way, though. So it could be a number of things.
Exactly.
You need clearance for a lot of things, too. So if you work around Groton, you can just be like, it's top secret.
If people
it's like, I can't tell you.
That's pretty much how it is. My brother worked in that area for a long time too, and it was like neither of us could really talk about whatever we did for work.
Yeah. Even if someone's holding a gun to your head, you got to go down with your secrets.
Yeah, it's like, no, it's probably better to take the bullet than break my NDA.
Right. Yeah, it would. Cuz you make those agreements with those people. That's why I've kind of like hit the coast button on my IT career, because it's like I could make a jump. Because really, all that IT really boils down to is like, all right, what kind of information are you allowed to know? Because it's information technology. But
yeah,
I'm helping people build museums and stuff right now.
Oh, that's awesome.
Good job. Yeah, it's cool. It's cool. It's a good gig. Good gig. I support a lot of hospitals too, hospital advertising infrastructure and shit. It's all right.
Oh, that sounds really cool.
Yeah, sounds cool. It's work, you know.
I like when you can do work and, you know, you finish whatever it is that you're working on and you can kind of feel proud of it.
What I really want to do is my music constantly.
Yeah.
That's it, man.
No, that makes sense. I actually like my day job as much as I like comedy, which is probably really weird.
You're one of those fortunate people.
I think I'm one of the very few people that's like, yeah, you know what? Doing science is not a terrible gig.
Doing the science. Yeah, so you can't even tell. Well, you said you were getting a degree in chemical engineering, so I can only assume there's some sort of wizardry involved. You do like high-level math shit, don't you?
Yeah, I actually am. I'm getting a master's degree in mathematics right now.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that's ridiculous, because I had a hard time with, like, algebra. You know, I understand the order of operations of basic arithmetic and adult things you need to get by. But, you know, trigonometry and stuff, keep it away from me, man. I could work really, really hard to get, like, a barely passing grade at any of that shit.
Yeah, I think I...
You know, I didn't like math until I took Calc 2 for my second time. I mean, I liked it, but I wasn't like a super fanatic about it. And I had this professor, and he would throw markers at people, and he would hide pop quizzes in like the ceiling tiles, and he's just like a very chaotic old Lebanese guy.
Chaotic negative. What's that, scale? I can't remember.
Chaotic evil.
Chaotic evil. Yes.
We're talking about the Dungeons and Dragons alignment scale.
Right. Yeah. I guess that's what it is. I see it on the internet all the time. They do it with Breaking Bad characters and shit, you know?
It's the alignment for characters' morality in Dungeons and Dragons. It's where that all came from. But I had this professor and nobody could get better than a 40 in his classes. And I couldn't figure it out. I was like, why the fuck?
Well, just everybody, is nobody everybody getting failed his class?
No, they do a curve.
No, they do a massive curve. Yeah. He was like, your homework is 90% of your grade. And so you'd take the homework was easy, but then you'd take his tests and it would be these very complicated looking problems. But it turns out that like what he was doing was kind of bringing things back to first principles. So he'd make a very long, ugly kind of problem. But if you knew something, you know, from pre-calc or trigonometry or something, it would tie it all back together and it would actually be a very simple problem.
Okay.
All right.
And yeah, something about that just got me going. I was like, that's like the funniest thing because I realized that it was a joke to him this whole time.
Yeah. I heard a YouTube guy recently say that people over-intellectualize shit and that's a big part of the problem. Like when you step in dog shit, this is the specific example. When you step in dog shit, right? You go, that sucks. And you like wipe your foot off in the grass. But you don't like intellectualize anything about it. You just go, it is what it is. It's dog shit. But people have a tendency to be like, oh, well, what kind of breed?
What kind of dog did this shit come from?
What kind of relationship did the dog have with its owner? You know, like all sorts of like stuff. Yeah. We are very strange creatures in that we over intellectualize stuff. So I could see how you eventually have a breakthrough in mathematical understanding. You know, I understand computers, so if it's broken and I can't fix the motherboard, I know that there's a manual I could find a piece that I could solder and get the thing running again. But instead, because I understand that it's a huge pain in the ass and expensive and I don't want to spend 9 hours doing like one little stupid thing that even if it, you know, fix that, there's probably still another problem. Bring it down intellectually. It's a fucking piece of shit broken computer, and it's time to throw it in the garbage, get a new computer.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you can
absolutely.
Just,
yeah. You know. People overthink things, and that's... And he would tell you before the test, he would hand you the test, and he'd say, take a deep breath.
Yeah.
And just think about the problems. And the first time I did that, I started laughing because I realized that this was all a joke to him. Mm. Like, this was a game that he was playing. He was playing it with us, not against us. And so I started laughing during the test. And he was like, what's so funny? And I was like, I finally figured out what you're doing.
I got it. It was a joke. Hey, do you know about Godard's incompleteness theorem? Have you heard about that?
Godel's incompleteness theorem? Yeah.
All right. So I'm a philosophical thinking person, not a I don't understand the math behind it at all. But people net result from that there's God. Have you ever heard of that?
I've heard of people doing that, but I don't think that the argument necessarily tracks well.
Yeah, see, that's the other way. That's the other way that people go. Because I don't see it. Like, again, not a math brain, can't really tell you, but this guy on the YouTube, listen to me, he broke it down mathematically to an extent where it's like, well, if you have the sum of all sets within a set what is that? It's a self-reference point. So it's a self that references. Like, you can prove that something references itself within this mathematical principle, apparently. And that mathematical principle exists regardless of if we actually even had symbols to, like, represent it. And it's like, well, it also could point to there, you know, not being anything there. But there's still the self-reference problem. It's a loop. It's like a loop that they found in math.
Yeah, they're basically the whole idea behind Godel's incompleteness theorem is that you have a system, a mathematical system that allows you to do proofs.
Right.
You can prove anything mathematically, any statement, whether it's true or false. Mm-hmm. But there are some things that cannot be proven. And so that's the idea of the incompleteness theorem. It's that there are going to be things that we can't prove. And we don't know that we can't prove them, but we can't.
Okay. Well, what about the baby Jesus? No, I'm just kidding. Imagine if I took the conversation in that direction suddenly. But yes.
I don't know. I am a high-key agnostic. So.
Agnostic, yeah. Agnostic means like you just don't know, so you can't, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't personally know. Maybe somebody does. I just, you know, have yet to experience anything that made me go like, yeah, that's gotta be God. But I'm not closed down to the idea.
Yeah, I'm bugged out because I've actually done some thinking and meditating on the subject, and I see a thing, but I don't know. It's kind of hard for me to describe something that has no form or shape. But I've had a couple of experiences that have bugged me the fuck out and goes, well, maybe. But here's the thing that I've learned, and this is where things get really abstract and weird, right? Okay, so you can't have nothing is not, because then something cannot be. So how do I explain this? We don't understand what the nature of the nothingness is, because all we've been experiencing is the something.
Yeah.
But you can experience nothing. And if you actually intellectualize it, you can pinpoint something that is nothing in your mind, even if it's as like an abstraction or whatever in your head.
Yeah.
That's pointing to the thing that exists independently of whether or not you're here. But the mind fuck of it all is that it exists by not existing. It's not existence.
Yeah.
And that Godard, this
feels very Spinoza.
Yeah, that's the, I don't know, man. Spinoza, I'm going to need to write that down or listen back to this and then find it. But what's Spinoza?
Spinoza was a philosopher, 1600s Jewish philosopher, and he was thorough. Like, going through his work was the only time that I've read a philosophy text where I had to take notes and keep referring back to them in order to just kind of get through the arguments. And I have read a metric shit ton of philosophy, and that was the one that was like really difficult.
Right.
Like, you know, a lot of philosophers cross-reference other philosophers, and, you know, you've got like Marx referencing Hegel and that kind of thing. But like Spinoza is like referencing back on himself a million times.
Yeah.
But I think you'd, if that's a thing that you're thinking, you would probably really enjoy his work.
Yeah, I would check it out. Yeah, there's just the thing that I just wanted to stress about my understanding is that there's a self-reference problem. Because I know, all right, you know how you experience color, right? Like you see,
sure.
You see colors with your eyes.
Yeah.
Think about how you would describe the color purple to somebody who had never seen it because they were blind.
Yeah, it's not possible.
The blind person would just go, no, there's no purple. I've had enough of an experience where I can actually like even focus in on it. And things get weird when I do that, but it's nothing. I have a relationship with nothing. People are like, oh, God, not God. I don't know, man, but there's nothing. So when people start arguing like, is there a God? Well, yeah, but it's not. It's nothing. Wait a minute. It's a mind fuck because, you know, I don't know. You can go about it endlessly, but when you told me you were in the math thing, I was like, oh, maybe there's a scientific principle. Either that or I need to, like, find some sort of medication for myself so I'm not sucked into some sort of bizarre vortex or whatever, I guess.
Yeah, I knew a mathematician that had said that, what do you call it, Euler's identity was the key to God.
Identity.
I don't necessarily know that that's true, but it... There is something really interesting about it in that it unifies a few thousand years worth of mathematics in one very short phrase, basically. It's the number E, which is 2.718-ish. It's just an irrational number. It's
one of those
like
endless
five.
Numbers that goes on forever and just...
Yeah, and it's the number that... is used to describe growth a lot in science. If anywhere in science, mathematics, you talk about growth and decay problems, even if you're talking about compounding interest, and that's actually how they discovered the number. Somebody was looking into the problem of compounding interest, and they found this number E, It seems to be kind of related to all growth and decay problems. And so, you know, when you have a nuclear a radioactive element decaying,
like the elephant foot in Chernobyl or whatever.
It decays at some rate that is some number A times E raised to the power of a K times the amount of time. And that decay rate is related to that number E. If you raise that number E to the power of I, which is the imaginary number, the square root of negative one.
Okay.
I don't like calling it imaginary. It's complex. It's like
imaginary is the whole thing. Like, that's kind of like what I'm getting at is your imagination is also nothing, and you can represent nothing with something. Which is, it's very weird, man. There's a lot of evidence that points that there's a God, but people go, oh, no, that means the baby Jesus. And no, not that. It's like,
yeah,
it's
maybe not that one.
It's bigger than all that stuff. That was somebody who found whatever it is that I'm referring to, the nothing that I perceive. Because just like a blind person, you can't, purple. Like, when I start talking about this to people who haven't experienced it at all, they're like, sounds interesting. And it's like, I swear to God, you'll inevitably find it, you know?
Yeah. There's a lot of that in Buddhist philosophy too. And
that is what I am, my friend.
All right.
Buddhist.
Okay. All right. I see where the nothingness comes in.
Yeah. See, if you meditate a bunch, you find it. And then you sound like a lunatic when you talk to people. You know,
cause I have had experiences with the nothingness. Yeah. I definitely know what you're talking about. When I was younger, deep into meditating every day, and definitely poked at that a couple times.
You can oopsie onto it via psychedelic too. I don't know how deep down the rabbit hole you want to go, but
I have heard of people doing that. My experiences with psychedelics are usually that my brain ends up going weirder places. I don't tend to to do visual.
It's all anything.
It's
self,
just my
self-referential.
Brain goes, my brain goes off in a weird direction. I like that idea of the self-referential set. There's a paradox related to that too. Russell's paradox.
What paradox?
Russell's paradox. It's named after Bertrand Russell.
The love muscle paradox.
No, Russell's.
Back to you. No, I know. I was making a really bad joke.
Sorry.
That was so awful. You just didn't even get it. You're like, no, the Russell paradox. All right. Back to na-na-na-na-na-na. Anyway, what's the Russell paradox?
So it has to do with self-referential sets. That one I don't think I could explain well.
All right.
I would recommend looking it up on YouTube or Wikipedia. There's some interesting explanations for it. And somebody talked about it with this idea where, so you have a town of barbers.
Mm-hmm.
And one barber shaves other barbers, and the other barbers will not shave themselves. Mm. And you end up with this kind of weird question of this one barber that shaves the other barbers, does he end up shaving himself? And you end up with a contradiction, and
this kind of sounds like it could lead to an I'm my own grandpa kind of a situation. Some sort of weird loophole.
It definitely does.
No.
yeah, there's something really interesting about it, but it's something that popped up kind of along the lines of the incompleteness theorem, where it made a lot of mathematicians really angry.
All right. Well,
because we were all, everybody was trying to codify everything and it's like set theory and figure out like some general rules for how things work and say, if you know these rules, you can figure out all the things.
Oh, like a unified theory of all the shit.
Basically. Yeah. And then Goodall was like, well, I don't think you can. And it made a lot of people really angry.
Yeah, well, I can imagine. Hey, I'm going to switch gears.
Yeah.
What was this dude's name? Anonymous. Poor Anonymous, that rapper that we knew.
Chaz. Yep. I have talked to him recently.
Is he okay?
He's doing all right. He's, you know, he's obviously been, you know, he went to a regular jail, and then he went from a regular jail to a psychiatric facility.
I hear you. Just for the audience real quick. So what year was that? What year did that happen?
That was 2016 or 20.
Hold on. I'll tell you.
2016.
So there was a rapper that I knew who was really talented. And you remember Matty Cypher? You remember that dude?
Matty Cypher.
Yeah, Matty Cypher. He's this dude out in New Haven. He was Spiderbite Records. You don't remember that?
He was really into ghosts and stuff. He did a lot of music with Jessalaw from Jedi Mind Tricks.
I have met him.
Yeah, okay. You've met him a couple times. But the dude he's got a label called Spiderbite, and he put a lot of effort into this kid. And he was telling me for years, like, yo, this kid Anonymous, he's really talented. He's, like, amazing. And they pressed a CD on Spiderbite. And I had a copy of it, and I listened through, you know, a couple times. I'm like, all right, it's not bad. I'll be honest. I was never blown away by the kid. I never was like, oh, my God, this is one of the best rappers I've ever heard. But people mature with their art. You know what I mean? They come along. And as far as where he was for the age he was and how he was rapping, he was ahead of the curve. I recognize that about him.
Yeah.
But I didn't think he was going to be a superstar or anything like that. I just thought he was like another New Haven dude or whatever. So, when he had an episode of some kind, I mean, I don't want to put his business out there. This is in the newspaper. So it's not like I'm blowing up somebody's spot.
Yeah.
He stabbed his mom. So, like, they rested his ass. And then it was like, yeah, that poor dude he had some sort of episode where he didn't. I don't know. I wasn't there.
It sounds like he had a mental break
of some kind.
Yeah, he. I actually am really close to this family. I babysat him when he was a kid.
I remember you telling me that, right?
And so, yeah, he had been doing LSD like it was his job. There's a whole thing where if you schizophrenia or some other dissociative disorders run in your genes, if you're taking a bunch of LSD, sometimes it makes it come out a little early. Usually that kind of stuff pops out when you're like 21, 22. He was about 18, 19. It.
Oh, he was that young. Holy shit.
He was very young. And so, you know, that had triggered that. And
He just lost it.
He thought that, you know, terrible things were, he thought that people were doing terrible things to him and kind of freaked out.
Just getting really paranoid.
Yeah, and it was like he had like false memories and that kind of thing. It was honestly kind of tragic.
Sounds like it.
But he ended up, going to like a regular jail for a few years, and he's been in a psychiatric kind of setting for a while, and is, doing actually pretty well for himself at this point.
It is crazy.
His family doesn't hold it against him.
Right. They know that there's something.
They know that he was just in a really bad place, and they're very like loving, kind, wonderful people. And so it was
that's the silver lining to all this, is he's not ostracized to the extent of like, it wasn't like he was trying to, I don't know. It sounds like he was in a situation where he thought he was defending himself. It wasn't like he had malcontent, like, oh, I didn't like that, you know.
Yeah, no, not at all.
Don't talk to me about the toilet seat being up, mom, or something fucking weird.
Yeah, it just, no. You
know, so it's sad.
No, not at all. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. I had a buddy that I grew up with. So this guy, maybe I shouldn't say the name. I don't know. I'll say his first name, Ralph. Remember Ralph?
Yes.
Yeah. Ralph has a cousin who is currently in New London. This also victim of his own circumstance guy. So this gentleman, you know, he was shot. He actually committed a murder because he thought, now this is absolutely erroneous, but this is what schizophrenia does to people. This is a tough one. So he thought what was going on was he was infecting people with HIV in the Mashantucket Pequot tribe. So what happened was, is this guy went to his cousin, my buddy Ralph, who's gone, and was like, "What are you doing?" And apparently ended his life, and then tried to join the army. So he committed this crime and then tried to join the army, and they're just like, he was in basic boot camp somewhere. I don't know, Fort Bragg, I guess. And they were like, "You're coming with us," because they figured it out. But then when they started questioning this poor, because look, there's no, Ralph is gone, but this poor guy's life is over. And he thought, I don't know what this is what was reported. So I'm not giving any public information about anything that is inappropriate. I hope I'm not pissing off anybody out there. Not my intention if I am. But this poor guy is, you know, not fit to stand trial, and he's just going to be in an insane asylum for the rest of his life. Because he thinks that people are trying to get him and shit. You know, it's wild. It's a disease. He thinks he's, you know, what do you do to help somebody in that position?
Yeah, I don't think that we know enough about the brain in a lot of ways to kind of, you know, even when we're giving people psychiatric meds, it usually takes 5 to 7 years for them to find a med that works for them. And it's really because... you can't just test the brain to see what it's, you know, if it's working properly, yeah, like on a chemical level.
Right.
And so you're really, you know, throwing darts at a board, and you can get some genetic information that helps kind of guide the process. And that's made things a little bit easier.
Yeah.
But that doesn't, you know, answer all the questions.
Right. Yeah. There's a lot of unknowns. I mean, they're still finding parts of the body today. I read an article about how they're like, "Oh, there's a new vein in the lung that we thought it was a vein. It's not a vein. It does something else. We don't know what, though."
I thought you were talking about finding new parts of the body of the guy that guy killed.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, you know, Jesus.
I was like, "Oh, wow, that's rough."
Wow. No. It all happened in one. It happened in a driveway. "Oh, my cousin's here." And then it was over in like 2 seconds. So the poor family was in the house when it happened, though.
Oh, God.
Yeah. But, yeah.
I kind of want to circle back to our comedy discussion, because I have a couple a couple questions for Sophia.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
First question. Top 3 favorite comedians. Go.
Ooh. All right. Ooh, this is tough. I'm going to say, as for modern comedians, I'll go the whole way. Sarah Silverman.
I love her.
Gilbert Gottfried.
I loved him.
And Robin Williams.
Okay.
All right. Second question. Do you have any upcoming shows?
So right now I have been, not taking a hiatus, but I am actually working on booking a transgender comedy festival.
Oh,
and so somebody tapped me from a nonprofit in New Haven, to kind of, throw this together. And so, you know, he felt like it was, you know, something that we needed to do. There's a lot of trans people in comedy. The list, it was funny because I didn't even really, you know, take stock of how many of us there are, in the Northeast. It's myself, Ange Buxton, they're from, Northampton area. They're originally from Springfield, and they were also a rapper, actually.
Yeah, there's a weird connection between hip hop and comedy, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Unless you're T.I. and then it doesn't work so well.
Oh, burn. yeah.
But yeah, so myself, Ange Buxton, Kendra Dawsey, and then I can't think of too many other people in like in a Northeast New England kind of area. But then there's a lot in New York, obviously. Other people that I've been trying to get on board with this festival, and so we should have the dates probably in the next couple of weeks.
So is this like a subgenre, August. Would you say? Like a subgenre of comedy, like trans comedy?
You know, to some extent, I do have people that come out to a lot of my shows that are trans people that love hearing comedy about our issues.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense.
They can relate.
Just nice to feel related to, right. I guess.
Yeah, that's why comedy's funny. Like, I can relate being in that situation and ha-ha, you know? And
that's what makes it
funny.
Well, to me.
If you can, like, understand the context and relate to it, that's what makes it funny.
Like, Cat Williams is hilarious on a bunch of levels. He's one of my favorites.
Cat Williams is great.
Well, he's funny to me because, I mean, he gets beat up by, like, 11-year-old children in, like, the schoolyard and shit. Like, there's a lot, like, everything about him is fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
I would give him the respect he deserved if I met him face-to-face, but you are aware that he basically got beat up by a child, right?
I know. No, this is the first time hearing of that.
No, it's hilarious.
It just after doesn't this, surprise me.
Yeah, after this, go online and search for Cat Williams fights, like, I don't know, What age is 11? Like fifth grader, fourth grader?
That's a sixth grader.
Sixth grader. Damn, yes. That's what it is. You got it. I think the video is Cat Williams beat up by sixth grader. It's a great watch. It's a great watch because he legitimately, like, what are you doing, little boy? Like the kid gets in his face and kicks his ass.
Oh my God.
He is a tiny man though, isn't he?
Yeah. He's a small guy. Yeah. I could see how it could happen.
Yeah. This was a big kid too. I mean, I remember when I was in sixth grade, there was this kid, huge, like a man. He was a man in sixth grade.
Man child.
Yeah. And all of us would just look at this guy. Like, Jesus, he's a man, you know what I mean? He hit all the growth spurts and stuff. So, you know, that weird, I don't know, but you still got your ass whipped by a child. So what are you going to do?
Yeah, life is complicated that way. But, yeah, I would say that queer comedy in and of itself is its own genre. Like, there are a lot of queer comedians. I did a queer showcase the other night over at the Majestic in Northampton.
Oh.
Hosted by Ange Buxton.
Cool.
And there was another trans comedian there. Well, Ange is trans also. Ange is non-binary. And then there was another trans woman comedian, Bailey Pope. And then a gay man comedian, Dan Frank. And honestly, it was a great show. And I feel like, you know, sometimes... some comedy environments can be abrasive for some people. Some people, you know, don't want to come out and be like kind of end up the butt of a joke or something. It's just like sometimes it's a buzzkill.
Right. Yeah.
And you know, I mean, if you're doing comedy a lot, you kind of get used to it. But like sometimes you're just like, I don't want that tonight. You know what I mean? You kind of want to like.
The thing about offensive humor that I've found, not to interrupt you, I'm sorry, but
it's totally fine.
If it's offensive, it can be funny, but if it's offensive and it's not, then it's just offensive. And I'm saying that as somebody who uses the word motherfucker very freely in my art, and I say words like cunt and shit and piss and all sorts of whatever to express myself. There's nothing I can't express with some four-letter words. I understand that maybe I could improve that aspect of my life, but you know, if I just say those things without a purpose, it's useless. Like if I just walked up to a stranger and went fuck, be like, okay, you know, like, but where do we go from here? You know,
well, I think there's a difference between being offensive and being mean, I guess, or being, you know, I don't know, edgy or whatever. But so like I tell jokes that I don't necessarily think that like parents would want their children to hear. You know, I talk about watching porn backwards and eating ass and
rapping like Nas, like the jizz goes back to the dick.
Yeah. and you know, these kinds of things. And, so, for kids, it probably wouldn't be appropriate, but, I've never written, a mean spirited joke about, except for in two cases. And one of them was about somebody that cheated on me. And I ended up being the butt of my own joke in that situation.
Yeah.
Where, this person I had been dating had told me not to say horrible things when I'm driving.
That's hard to do.
Yeah. Well, so I don't have like super aggressive road rage. I never really, I won't, ride people's ass or anything. Or
I think everybody has a little bit of road rage.
A little bit. Well, yeah.
So my road rage is limited to 4-letter words and yelling out the window.
Okay. It's reasonable.
Maybe flipping somebody off, but so I happened to say, to somebody who cut me off in New Haven, go kill yourself.
Whoa.
It's bad. It's bad to say. And she's, she rightfully said, this is a horrible thing for somebody to say. And so I said, what should I say? What's better? She said, well, why not something positive? And so I thought about it. And so the next time, it happened, I rolled down my window and, in my loudest and most angry voice, I said, "Hey, go fucking better yourself."
I like that.
So her and I, we date for, a few years, and, one day, a year and some change ago, she wakes me up on a Sunday morning mm-hmm. and says, you should move out. I've been cheating on you. And so what was my response?
I don't know. What was your response?
Well, so the joke is people can either guess go better yourself or go kill yourself.
Oh, I got it.
And so if somebody, the joke is that I said go kill yourself. I didn't actually do that in the scenario.
Right, right, right.
The joke is that I did that, and then it's that go I didn't improve yourself. As a person. So I'm the butt of my own joke in that I, in that time, didn't improve as a person.
Yeah.
Kill him with kindness.
What's that?
I said kill him with kindness.
Yeah, and then my other mean-spirited joke is, explaining that, when I was a kid, I got bullied a lot, being kind of a weird, nerdy kid, and I never wanted to bully anybody as an adult, but I, finally saw somebody that I really just couldn't resist, and it was a cop on a Segway. Because it's like, who are you going to catch on that fucking thing? What does that go, 4 miles an hour? That's the nerdiest thing that's ever existed, is a cop on a Segway. Like, you could just walk faster. Just walk, dude. Yeah,
it's designed to just lean forward.
Makes me think of Paul Blart.
Yeah.
It makes me think of
the guy, mall cop.
The guy who invented it died using one. He
I heard that.
Fell off a cliff.
Why was he using a Segway on the side of a cliff?
Because where was he? In California, where they have those like hills and roads and shit. He had a property with a driveway that was up on a cliff, and he was using it in his driveway. And just leaned too far and fell like 200 feet to his death. Done.
That is
pretty fucking wild. Like, I am going to invent this lazy thing, and then I'm going to lean forward using it and then die as a result of it.
Yeah, it really sucks.
It would be like, hey, man, I got this toaster. I made it. My name is Mr. Toast, and I made a toaster. It creates toast.
And now I'm going to jump into a bathtub with it.
Yeah. All right. Sophia, I appreciate you. I'm so glad that you came and you joined us on this journey. We're back. We're going to do more of these. I swear. We took a 6-month break. I started to back up a pace one. I'm going to get some bigger people on this too, some rappers that I know. Sophia,
It was great talking with you, Sophia.
I would love to make some music with you in the future.
I would love to make music with you too.
Let's do it.
Awesome. Please.
All right. Peace out, everybody.
Awesome.